Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today's episode is brought to you by About Time We Met Skincare, and this stuff has been an absolute game changer for me, and I use it every single day. If you follow me on Instagram, you'd see that every day I have 14 daily habits that I try and tick off, and one of those daily habits is self-care, and About Time We Met has helped me so much with this over the last 6 months. So every night I use their foaming cleanser to try and wash off the day's kind of dirt and sunscreen and zinc and all that stuff that we end up on our face after a long day of just living life. So I use their foaming cleanser, and then I also use their Naturally Brilliant oil. This stuff is so nice. I put it on my skin, rub it all around, and it just soaks it all up. Smells so good, and it's also good for my mental health. So a few things that I love about Time We Met is it prides itself on its antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and antimicrobial properties, along with mental well-being benefits. It features sandalwood oil, which contains a key component called alpha-santalol that can help relax and calm your nervous system, and has been used for centuries in Ayurvedic meditation and practices. And also, studies have shown that when you apply sandalwood oil topically to your skin, this component can work in similar ways to any anxiety medication by interacting with the receptors in your brain to regulate anxiety. I absolutely love this stuff. I know you guys are going to love it too. If you head over to their website, abouttimewemet.com.au, you can use the code ACC15 for a big 15% off everything. I know you're going to love their stuff. It's a big part of my daily routine, and I know if you guys use it too, you're probably going to enjoy it. So check it out. Let me know what you think. Tag me and both About Time We Met on your social media. Would love to know what you think of it. This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to episode 146 of Good Humans Podcast with a very fun guest and a friend of mine and a friend of the Good Human Factory and an ambassador of the Good Human Factory, Jackie Bell. Jackie is someone who you are going to be inspired by. This was a really fun chat. And yeah, Jackie's the youngest person to run an ultra marathon on every continent in the world. So you know this is going to be a wild chat. It is Brain Awareness Month this month, so I'd love for you all to go and check out our sponsor, Drinkarepa, the brain drink. They've been spending millions of dollars on clinical studies to prove that their product works. If you head over to their website, drinkarepa.com, you can learn all about the brain drink. It's a beautiful black currant flavor, all natural, no caffeine, but it gives you energy and clear focus for your whole day. I've been using this stuff every single day. I use their powder in my smoothies. I use their capsules every morning, and then drink the drinks pretty much all day every day. If you use the code GOODHUMAN over on their website, you get a big 25% off. And if you want to come in the next couple of weeks down to Currumbin Beach on the 30th of March to end Brain Awareness Month, you can grab or come get involved in our Mindful Morning. It's a free event. And yeah, if you go to the show notes, you can find the sign up link. Would love for you to come be involved. Okay. Today's episode is, yeah, a really fun one. Jackie's been an ambassador for the Good Human Factory for the past couple of years. Such a beautiful human, and her story is really inspiring. She grew up in Brisbane, was super into her sport, played tennis, loved skipping. There's a really funny story about skipping in there. And then after school was a little bit lost. She dropped out of school to follow a career in sports and exercise science at TAFE, and then uni. Didn't really love uni, and then found herself a little bit lost in her late teens, early 20s. And then she found running. She was inspired by some social media posts and said, you know what, maybe I can get into running. Signed up to 4 ultra marathons all around the world. And then, yeah, never looked back. Ever since then, she's just found a way to do it, finding sponsors, finding a way to just get around the world and run ultra marathons. I was so inspired by hearing her story. She wears her heart absolutely on her sleeve, Jackie. And it's just such a beautiful, beautiful story watching somebody be the world record for the youngest person to ever run an ultra marathon on every continent. It's just wild. So I know you guys are going to love this. She also opens up a little about her sexuality at the end of this podcast. Jack and I have done some stuff in the past
around Pride Month, and it's been really cool to hear her explain her journey with this and hopefully give you guys some input onto how to treat people in your life maybe who have a sexuality a bit different to you, or if you yourself are finding it hard to maybe come out of the closet or express yourself how you want to. Jackie has a really beautiful way how she does for herself. So let's jump into the episode. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Jackie Bell.
How you going, Jack?
Thank you for having me. Where's my drink?
Finally, we're doing this. It's been a long time coming. You've been a friend of mine, an ambassador for the Good Human Factory for quite a few years now, almost since the start. Yeah. And we haven't been able to do a podcast yet, but here we are, and it couldn't be a better time. Obviously, I'm doing the 100 days to 100 Ks right now. You're an incredible endurance athlete. You've run ultra marathons on every continent, the youngest person to ever do that. And I'm very excited to hear your story. But first, we're going to do a little Arepa Cheers, the sponsor of this podcast. You said you've tried it before. Cheers.
Cheers.
You've tried it before. You said you spilt it on a white carpet before.
I spilt it on white carpet. I actually opened it and it cracked open and spilt it on a bed as well. That was good.
Not good.
Don't spill it places, but...
Don't spill it, but it's delicious.
It's worth it.
It's very delicious, but thank you to Arepa for fueling our brain for this chat. And yeah, it's going to be a really fun one at that. So the other question I always open Good Humans Podcast with is, what are you grateful for right now in life?
Honestly, I just think I'm grateful for my health, my body, and being able to do the things I want to do. I mean, there was a moment on the last day of my retreat recently where I was hiking up the mountain and we wanted to see the sunrise at the top right. And then halfway up, we started to see the pink, orange, and like these beautiful colours in the sky. And I was saying to Mon, who you might end up having on the podcast, and I was like, I feel so negative right now about seeing the colours in the sky before I'm at the top, and I'm not there yet. And I was like, this is ridiculous though. You know, we're in our top physical health. We should be so grateful for being able to walk up this mountain. It's a beautiful morning. Everything's great. And all I'm thinking about is the negative things about, like, we're not there at the top when we want to be. And she said the exact same thing. And so we were able to, like, reflect on, especially because at the retreat we choose a daily intention and our last day was gratitude. And she also said the same thing, and she brought it back to, like, being grateful for our bodies and our health and everything. And in a moment, yeah, we were just so focused on not making it to where we wanted it to be and this certain colour or something. It was so silly. But, yeah, so super grateful for my own health, my the people around me, and just life, yeah.
I love that. It's nice to reflect on sometimes that mindset that we can get in that can be quite toxic and looking at the negative things, but then you're like, wait a second, I'm out here hiking in the morning rather than lying in bed and not even seeing any sunset. So,
and honestly, I think like anyone you listen to a podcast about, or like someone you look up to, they still have the exact same thoughts as you. I mean, do you? You probably get negative thoughts pop into your mind.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you have to pull yourself back and stuff, and it's like, I think people think that everyone they look up to is this like absolute god, but I think it's like, no, they're just aware of it and they pull themselves back. Yeah,
exactly. I absolutely love that. Another thing that I absolutely love is that you've been an ambassador for the Good Human Factory, my mental health organization, for almost since the start of the ambassador program. Tell me, what's it mean to you to be part of the Good Human Factory and be an ambassador and helping me try and spread that message of making mental health cool and making it a bit more, I guess, youthful and just easy to digest and a bit more fun, I guess. A lot of mental health organizations come from not a dark place, but come from the mental illness, seeking help, which is so important. But I feel like that really is directed towards the 20% of people with the mental illness. The Good Human Factory is inclusive. It's 100% of us, everybody who has mental health, which is all of us, and trying to find those daily things and be able to pull yourself out of those negative mindsets. So, yeah, what's it mean to you to be part of the Good Human Factory?
I mean, I think, to be honest, when I first said yes, I was like, oh, yeah, cool, like, I'll get a free T-shirt or something. And then I got another free T-shirt and then another free T-shirt, and I was like, what does he want from me? And he never asked for anything in return. And he gave me more T-shirts and he gave me more clothes and hats and whatever it was. And he just kept giving without asking anything in return. And I think that was a really big part of it.
And we did the...
And then we did a shoot as well. Did a shoot with, I had a business, the Platform 6, and it was all about, you know, like spreading word of the LGBTQIA+. I'm so useless with it. Community, and you're all on board with it.
And we did the tie-dye shirts together.
Tie-dye shirts, and they were so sick. And just everything you ever did, was there was no return for you, but it was just all about giving. And
it's just about spreading awareness. And yeah. Like, I know as an athlete myself, like, I don't have the budget to give people money. So I'm like, I don't want to ask for anything, but I'll give you shirts. Tell me about, give me a story. Have you ever been stopped and had people compliment your shirts? You were saying before.
Oh, 100%. I mean, at my retreats recently, Runescapes or whatever, we've done 12 retreats now. And they're a startup that I've done kind of thing. And the point of Runescapes is to bring the experience that I've had in running across a desert, like the Namibian desert, with carrying everything on my back for the whole week and totally battling some hard times. I want to bring that to people in their everyday lives, but I don't think that everyone should have to go and run across the Namibian desert in Africa. It's not possible. People can't pay 10 grand and go and, sorry, I keep knocking this. People can't go and pay and run across a desert in Africa. But I want the whole experience to be encompassed into an amazing experience and everyone to be able to do that and kind of improve themselves as a person. And, you know, I'm hoping you can come my next one in Crumbin or whatnot. But, yeah, I think, just
being able to... you're trying to round back to wearing the shirts and the messages.
Yeah, on. I mean, so many people as well. Like, actually, it was my meditation journaling girl, Mon. She's my meditation journaling teacher. She loves the gratitude T-shirts. Every single time I'm somewhere, she sees my T-shirts everywhere, and she's like, I love that shirt. I want it. So,
I'll give you one to give to her. Yeah. I've got a few in the drawer. But today we're going to get to know your story. It's quite unique because we've been, I guess, friends for a while and I've heard bits and pieces of your story. Very much like a lot of my friends who I've had on this podcast, you learn so much when you get to go back in time and let people reflect on their story themselves. So we're going to do a bit of a snapshot throughout your life and then we're going to catch up to your running career and your retreats. But let's go back to the start. Where'd you grow up? What was life like as a kid? What do I need to know about your upbringing that's cool up until high school to understand Jackie Bell?
I mean, I actually grew up in Ipswich. I don't tell people that often. I avoid it.
Everybody
does. But Ipswich is awesome. I mean, if I forgot my lunchbox, my mum was able to drive 5 minutes and bring it to me. So that was sick. School in Ipswich Girls Grammar School was great. My brother went to Ipswich Grammar. He was just 1 year older. It was just the two of us. And, we both did every single sport under the sun. And I always strive to be better, be more and stuff. And I found out that no one had ever gotten into the school skipping team when they were in year four. And so to get into the school skipping team, you had to be able to do a certain amount of double unders plus crisscrosses, TJs, whatever it was. So I practiced every single morning and night to be able to do that. And I got in. I got into the goddamn skipping school as the youngest person possible. So I did it, yeah. My poor parents, I mean, they're asleep in bed and we live in an old Queenslander building and they've got like wooden slat built like floors and they just heard clonk, clonk, clonk every morning. So I got into the school skipping team. And then no one had ever gotten into the open tennis girls tennis team. I was year seven, right? Year 12s is open team in year 12. So no one had ever gotten into the tennis team in the opens in year 12, plus the basketball team as well in year 12. And so I was like, I'm going to bloody do it. And so I got into the open tennis team for tennis. Year seven or eight, I can't remember exactly, but the youngest possible, and then also basketball. So two teams in 1 year, absolutely went for it. And
so you're just a driven, sporty person.
It's so funny looking back. And then even my brother, I mean, he's only 1 year older than me.
Do you think that's where a lot of your competitiveness came from, having an older brother, 1 year older?
I think so, maybe. And like, he couldn't even tie his shoelaces. I taught my older brother, a year older than me, how to tie his shoelaces and how to do certain things. And like, I was just always so driven. And I would set a goal, I'd achieve it, and I'd go for it kind of thing. And so teach my brother how to tie shoelaces, and then hitting that goal of, like, getting in the skipping team and then being a part of the year seven and eight, like, open tennis team and basketball team, like,
wow, yeah. So that was your life. School was just really heavily into sport.
Yeah.
What was high school like for you? How'd you find high school?
I was at Ipswich Girls Grammar. I then found it really difficult, to be honest, with the like whole female aspect of I think just like the camaraderie between all the girls. I don't like all the bitchiness, drama and anything. I just like people to be just straight up, very honest, and that was really difficult.
Can you imagine all girls school? It comes with plenty of drama, I guess.
It's funny because, I mean, I'm actually best friends with all of my friends from school still, which is so unique. I mean, I don't know many girls at all who are still friends with their girls from school.
I don't have a single friend from school.
Oh, no. So we're literally like a group of 7 or 8 girls, and we are best friends. I actually, I own my own unit. I've owned it for 3 years or something, but I Airbnb it full time, and I actually live with a girl in my school group because I prefer to live with her because she lives near trails, so I can run with a group of people who run near the trails. And I, I don't know. I just like her energy. She goes to bed early. She wakes up early, and she's just such a good person to be around. She never skips a day of work. She just has such good values.
I love that. But you said you found it difficult at school. Well, how'd you, was there anything that you went through at school that was super challenging? Because you said before we started recording, you left early, which going to a private school can sometimes be maybe not the favorite thing for a parent to see their kid who's gone through a private school and spent a bit of investment in their schooling to leave early. What was, how'd you make that decision?
I mean, I don't know if it was the people pleasing thing of me or like the I think maybe it was. It was like this this within me, I felt bad to like not make everyone around me happy or whatever it was. And I started to really struggle with that when it got to year 10, 11, 12. And so I really wanted to leave. So any chance I could, I was like, I want to leave. I'm out. Like, I don't want to do this. And my parents were really good. I didn't just say I want to leave and left. I came up with a full plan.
Yeah.
So for anyone listening who is in the younger stages of life, if you can come up with a full plan of like why you want to leave and how you're going to do it and stuff. I mean, I came up with a plan of leaving, and then I got into university and I got to do sports science and all these sorts of things. But it's just about being able to still have those opportunities.
Yeah, so what was the plan for people listening?
So I was going to be a professional tennis player. I used to play doubles with Ash Barty and stuff. We lost when we played doubles. Ash, that's on you. and then, I mean, kept going, but yeah, I think it was just about becoming coming up with that second kind of
what else am I going to do?
Yeah, what else? Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I came up with I did my Cert 3 in fitness at school. I then did my Cert 4. Then I came out with my diploma. So I was then able to have a direct access plan to sports science and all these other avenues after doing my Cert 4 and stuff. So
that's what you thought you were going to do after school.
Yeah.
You told me you did 4 uni courses that only lasted a month. What was 17 till 20 years old of your life? What did that look like?
So, yeah, I mean, I told my parents I had this plan and everything, and they were like, sweet, that's great. My parents wanted a plan for me after school. And fair play, if I was a parent, I would want my kid to, if my kid comes to me with a plan of how they want to leave school and they've thought it out, then great. Like, how can you knock them back?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I went to them with my plan and stuff, and then I ended up not loving what I was studying. I mean, the first time around, I went to university, and I think it was sports science or something. I think I went in with cadavers, and the smell of the dead bodies killed me. I got over that. Then second round was kind of to do with year 12 kind of knowledge and stuff. And so it was all about being a secondary school teacher. So my secondary that I was aiming for was all about being a teacher. And when I went into the education system, I couldn't really fathom how it all laid out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really like it. And I just didn't like how it all played out. I didn't like NAPLAN. I didn't like that it was all about the 4-3-2-1 or the... what is it, ABCD or whatever, of the ticking off the boxes and stuff.
The
curriculum and everything.
Wasn't much
and
flexibility to it. Study school teaching and you're like, I don't like this either.
Yeah, and I was sitting there, actually, now you mentioned it, I was sitting there in the lecture of, like, day three probably of one of my lectures at the Southeast Queensland something university, and everyone in the class was so passionate about how everything was delivered, and I was like, I don't resonate with that. Yeah. See. I was like, you're also like passionate about this certain thing, and that's not me. Yeah.
So what was the plan then? Where did you think life was going to go after two uni degrees that you like dropped out of? What were you doing for work? And then, yeah, how did you get to running?
I mean, I
feel like still a couple of years of being a little bit lost before you.
Yeah, I was definitely lost. I mean, so I'd gotten a job as a fitness / athletic / outdoors person at Daydream Island in the Whitsundays. I was super excited about it. Got that job, made good money, and then on the side as well, we made extra money by being a babysitter and all these things at Daydream Island in the Whitsundays. Loved it. It was so cool. And I mean, Daydream Island was amazing.
Beautiful.
But then, I guess I wanted more from life, and it was only a short-term thing and stuff. And
so you leave there, come back to Brizzy?
Well, I did it for a little bit. So I went to Italy, actually. I went to Italy. I worked as an au pair for a little while. I met a few amazing people, actually. Do you know Josh Lynott?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I spoke to him on the phone
this
yesterday.
This is the craziest thing, right? So everyone listening will find this nuts. But
he's going to come on the potty.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
He's a tennis pro as well.
Yeah, so I was a tennis player. Josh was as well. But I worked at Daydream Island in the Whitsundays when I got knocked back for when I was like just under 17. I got knocked back for a job as a gym manager. So the guy said to me, I got hired for a job, and then he said, oh, I didn't realize you were 17. And I was like, oh, what the hell? Like, I'm 17 on my resume. And he's like, I didn't know. So anyway, and I was gutted. So I like went off somewhere else to Daydream Island.
Yeah.
Literally. But anyway, I met Holly, this girl who is Josh Lynott's ex-girlfriend or whatever. And she had been doing some stuff or whatever. Like, yeah, she came to the forefront. And it was just nuts to me that literally after my mishap through everything, she came back up to the surface. And I messaged her and I was like, Holly, I think I said, do you know Cooper and Josh and everything? And she was like, what the hell? And I actually, I knew Holly through living in Italy, in Rome. And we were in Rome in the Vatican City one night, and a guy came up to us, this Italian guy, and he said to us, he said to Holly, because she was the blonde one, he said, what did he say? He said, are you a magnet? And she said, what? And he said, oh, because I'm really attracted to you. So he said to her, you're a magnet, I'm really attracted to you, and like he was just hooked on her. I mean, Holly always got all the blonde girls and stuff. She was beautiful and whatnot. But I got to know Holly really well through all of that, and then years later, turns out...
Yeah, what took you to Italy?
So I watched the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Okay.
Literally watched the movie Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. I thought it was amazing and wanted to travel everywhere. I thought I was going to die really young. So I wanted to like make sure I got in every opportunity and every experience I could straight away. And I was like diving at everything, and that's why I started kind of like kicking off everything, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm. So you get home from Italy... How old are you when you get home from Italy, and how does running come about? Because I'm excited to get into the running part of your story.
I know. I mean, I guess I got home from Italy and I was probably like 20. And I mean, I was probably honestly a bit of a shit show. I got a really good job actually though in a gym, and it was going well. But then things kind of got a bit mundane after a while.
A bit stale.
Yeah, I mean, I was honestly earning amazing money. I was doing so well for myself. But then money's not enough, right? I mean, for me, like, I need to be like, there needs to be a purpose to things.
Yeah.
So it wasn't enough. And then, yeah, it wasn't enough. So, I guess the realization came about, and, then I decided to go to Bali, where they got the tattoo. Wait, where's the video? That's tattoo. Yeah, the Bali tat. I mean, I've been living in Bali for a while. I had really bad mental health, and I was struggling pretty bad. And I went to the doctors and said, I'm struggling really bad. And the doctor said, oh, okay, what's up? And I was like, oh, I'm feeling a bit sad. And they pretty much just prescribed me with medication. And I was like, all right. And I was crying. And
didn't
then,
ask
you
about anything else.
Nothing else. Nothing else. It was a 1 to 10 question thing. And I was like, wow. And then I went home to my mom and dad, and I was like, all they did was ask me 1 to 10. And that was it. And my mom and dad, like, my dad was really good. And he was like, I don't want you to take medication. He's like, what else is there? And I was like, well, I love yoga and stuff. And he was like, well, I'll go halves of you in doing a yoga course. I get emotional.
God bless dad.
Yeah. I got it all on my toes. But nah, that was awesome. And I was cooked. Like, I was at the doctor's and they just were like, that's it. And I said, oh, can I see a psychologist as a female? And they're like, no, we only have a male. And I was like, what? And they were just like, we don't have anyone for you to see.
And that was when, like, you got home from Bali and you just...
No, this was before Bali. Before Bali. Before.
What,
yeah.
In that job when you're making good money, but you're just...
Yeah, yeah, I was making great money. Everything was sweet, but I was like, I was so unhappy and sad and stuff. And then I went home and I was like, oh, I went to psychologist. I'm sad and everything. And then and went to the doctors and they were like, we can only give you a psychologist who is a male. And I went to my... Told my parents this, and my dad was like, I don't want you to take medication.
Let's do this yoga course.
He was like, I'll help you out. He's like, I'll go halves of you, whatever you need, like. And he was like, can you save up enough money to go and do the yoga course? So I then went and did my yoga teacher training course, which was 200 hours in Chengdu. Wow. Amazing, yeah. He's such a legend.
Good.
And then, so that's how I got that. And then I got this one as well, stillness. So everyone sees that one and they're like, you're the least still person I know.
Yeah, you do.
But, like, stillness means, so stillness is like, it relates to the om, because it's like, it's stilling the fluctuations of your mind. It's like, I'm just here right now with you. It's not like I'm not in the future, I'm not in the past. It's like stilling the fluctuations of your mind. And when we did the yoga course, I did my 200-hour teacher training. I learned so many things and...
Nothing that GP told you.
Nothing. I mean, I couldn't believe that. And I mean, now when I get any... Health? Sorry?
Did that help with the mental health a lot, the yoga? And
massively, yeah. And even chatting to Carolina, you know, your partner before, like, just from 2 seconds with her, I was like, I could unpack so many things with her right now. Like, she was a model or whatever it was. There was a few models in our course. And, like, now when I get tattoos, I get my tattoos to face me because I want to see the tattoo. Yeah. I want to see the tattoo and I want to be reminded of whatever it is.
Yeah.
My current tattoos, like, or the yoga ones, they face you. But, like, I don't really like that. And so, yeah, it's been a massive thing for me as well. Yeah, well, since that.
Amazing. So you go to Bali... Seems like your mental health maybe makes a little bit of a turn.
Got a bit better, but then I got pulled off my scooter.
Pulled off your scooter?
I know, rogue. yeah, so I was in Bali. I thought it was going to be a physical practice, like as in vinyasa and stuff, you know what I mean? Like, internal practice, good for my mental health and everything, which my dad was helping me pay for. But then during the yoga course, it ended up being, more of an internal practice. So it wasn't very physical at all. Right. So during the 200-hour yoga teacher training, I got the om tattooed. It was, we sat still so much.
How'd you find that? Not easy.
Oh, so, I mean, I was 21. I was the kid of the group. Like, it was so hard, but it was so good as well. And
I feel like it would have taught you some real lessons on discipline, especially with I know where the story's going with your ultra running, being able to be present for a long time.
100%.
It's so important.
And I mean, like, it was so difficult. And then I think it was probably 5 weeks in, even I was chatting to Carolina about, like, eating issues and, like, when you undereat. And, I mean, I probably only speak about more as an ultra runner now, but, like, under-eating, and then I think if you under-eat, the only way out of that is binge eating, which is not spoken about. And I speak about it in my public speaking talks. And, I mean, it's crazy to think some of the people who resonate with that most, the most unexpected people. I mean, I have literally, like, the most prestigious grammar schools in all of Australia and outside of Australia be like, holy crap, like, I resonate with that. And they'll be like a guy or a girl, whatever. And, like, I struggle with binge eating, whatever it is. And it's just, like, overeating a food to, like, make yourself feel better and, like, this euphoric feeling you put yourself in for a short period of time.
Yeah, wow.
Sugar high, like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it's such a thing that isn't spoken about.
So were you struggling with that a little bit too?
Massive. I mean, for years. That was the worst thing I ever had, yeah.
Wow.
And I have no shame with it at all now, but, like, it was the worst. Like, it was so hard because I would put myself in this euphoric state and then afterwards, you know, you try and you feel guilty, you feel horrible, it's massive slump, and then you try and, like, not eat for days, and it's just like a yo-yoing effect. Yeah. And so some of the people who really resonated with that were, like, people from like, no, you're fine. They'll people like from grammar schools, like the most prestigious grammar schools.
And that's been public speaking now. Yes. You share parts of this story and people
relate. I always talk about my binge eating, always. And everyone, I mean, everyone's like, oh shit, like, no one speaks about binge eating. Have you ever heard someone speak about it?
Not really.
Not really. Has Carolina?
Not really.
Not really. And I bet you, like, if I said to her binge eating, that is the one thing that she can literally tell you that she is like, yes, that's it.
Opposite, though, quite often you hear about people, like, starving themselves and not eating much.
It's not that, though. But to get out of binge eating, I mean, to get out of anorexia or the under-eating, it's binge eating. That's the only way. So, like, I mentioned earlier to Carolina, and she straight away was like, oh, fuck yeah, that's it. Like, and it's just not spoken about. And so, I think in my keynotes, I talk about that so blatantly.
Yeah,
wow. I say it straight up. And
well, thank you for sharing it with us. I feel like there's going to be definitely people out there listening right now that are like, oh.
I just don't think it should be something you're ashamed of. Like, but people don't know how to talk about it. It's like, oh, I ate too much junk food. I'm embarrassed. I ate too much. Like, whatever it is. But it's like, who gives a shit? Honestly, most people, anything you're feeling, someone else is feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you come home from Bali. Sounds like you're still maybe a little bit rocky with your mental health.
I was actually doing really good.
But you might have at least some skills. You probably sounds like you've got some more skills on how to manage your own emotions, on how to manage your breath, on how to manage just being, which is what yoga can really do, especially if you brought a lot of stillness. Let's go to 22 now, because that's when you start running. It blows my mind that you're the youngest person to run an ultra marathon on all continents on this planet. And you weren't a runner until 22. What got you into running? And what was your first challenge?
As I was saying to you when we got onto the beach earlier, I mean, my dad used to make me run home from the tennis courts because I had a bad tantrum kind of thing. And he would be like, you're on your own. But, I mean, I think with running, it kind of just came to me. And I was like, oh, this makes me feel good. And then, as I said, my dad made me run home from the tennis courts. I was a shit show when I was younger, and then I didn't learn from my tantrums, but I actually got fitter and faster from my run home from the courts and stuff. I didn't tell him my kind of tantrums were failing. But, I mean, it's just perspective, right?
Well, how old were you though when you're running home from the tennis court?
12, 14, whatever. What I mean, yeah, I was so young. I'm trying
to, like, fast forward now to, 21, 22. Like, what happened when you were 22?
I mean, I loved traveling.
Were you still running?
Would
you run for exercise, like, when you were 20, 21? Well, to be honest,
I loved travel, and I felt like when I was traveling, running was the best way to see places. I mean, when you travel,
gone for a run,
Cooper!
Well, I've always been surfing, so I've, like, never traveled anywhere.
Okay, surfing doesn't do it. But so when I travel, right, if I'm in a country, like, where have you traveled recently? Name first place. Come to mind. Go.
Oh, Europe.
Europe. But where? Go.
Ibiza.
Okay. So if I land in Ibiza, the best way to see Ibiza would be for me to land, go to my hotel, whatever it is, and then park all my stuff up, and then go for a run. You see the place so much better.
I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah. I mean, if you land at Coolangatta Airport right here.
It's probably the best place ever, and run the surfers. Far out, you see that.
But if you plant your bags down and you leave it and then you go for a run, either direction, like, you see the place so well. You see Palm Beach, Crumbin, Surfers Paradise, yeah, whatever it is. Cool, or the other way, yeah, surfer, like, you see everywhere so much better. Yeah.
Let's talk about your competitive running now.
Yeah.
Because I'm just still trying to wrap my head around the fact that you're the youngest to run an ultramarathon and all these continents, because running an ultramarathon is anything more than a marathon, but you've run like 250-kilometer races. So tell me about when you first were like, okay, I'm going to run an ultramarathon.
So I got home from all my travels overseas and stuff. I was 22, sitting at home. Tennyson. Tennyson is where they actually run all the Brisbane tennis tournaments for people. They've got the female big, I don't know, not the Fed Cup, the Davis Cup, no. Oh, yeah, Fed Cup. Fed Cup for females is coming up next month. Anyway, I was sitting at home, PJ's on. It was like 11 a.m., I mean, middle of the day, and I was on my laptop and I was scrolling through my phone, all the goods. I mean, scrolling through my phone on my laptop, not doing anything in my PJs and being lazy, and it was middle of the day, and I was being a total potato sack. My brother was also sitting on the couch, and I caught myself out, and I was like, holy shit, I'm literally scrolling through, watching everyone else's life, and like, I was so unhappy within myself. I mean, I think it's fine to scroll through and look at other people's lives, but if you're not happy within yourself, then it's not. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all about perspective, as I said earlier, but I was so unhappy, and I was a shit show, and I was watching everyone else living their life, and it was a total mess. And I just didn't know how to get myself out of that hole. And it was around that period that I decided, like, I saw a guy, Andrew Papp, my good friend now, running a ultramarathon in the Simpson Desert. I saw him doing that, and I was like, he looks like a crazy motherfucker. And I was like, maybe I'll do something like that. I started researching how to run an ultramarathon. I saw these races, and then I ended up signing up for one of these races, which was the Racing the Planet 4 Desert Grand Slam. And that wasn't just one race, because, I mean, I've been a personal trainer now for, like, God, over 10 years.
Yeah.
And so I know that, like, you can't just do one, you can't just do one fitness challenge, right?
Oh, you're not going to... Telling the guy who's just signed up for one 100-kilometer race.
But you can't just do one thing and overhaul everything. You need to, like, do something that is going to help you out for a bigger, like, longer period of time.
So you sign up to four ultras in different continents.
My whole idea was one, which was the Simpson Desert Ultra, and then... And then I realized, like, I literally Googled, like, how to train for an ultramarathon. And then I came across Racing the Planet's 4 Desert Grand Slam. And if anyone listening follows ultramarathons, they all know Dean Canassi. He's the best. He's ultramarathon man. And he did Racing the Planet's 4 Desert Grand Slam.
So tell me, where are those four desert races?
So this guy, Dean Canassi. And how long are they? So Dean Canassi actually has had studies done on him, and I don't think he gets lactic acid buildup. He's a freak. Like, he's amazing. But also, if you meet him, he's so unassuming. If you meet him, he won't assume that you know who he is, and he's a legend. I love him. But and his daughter's my age, so I think that's why he kind of warmed to me. Mm-hmm. But essentially, Racing the Planet is for... multi-stage ultramarathons, self-supported across four of the harshest deserts in the world. The first one is in the Namibian Desert in Africa. Second one is the driest desert, the Gobi Desert in Mongolia. Third one is Chile.
Oh, no, Asia's Mongolia.
Second one's Asia, yep.
Third one's Chile, South America.
Yep, Chile, South America, Atacama Desert. Amazing, Sam. De Pedro, probably one of my favorite deserts ever. And the fourth one is Antarctica.
Wow. So they're your four first ones. Tell me about your first one. What was your first one, and how was the training?
I totally cooked. I mean, I had 8 months to train for that one.
How long was it?
It was 8 months.
Long was the race?
Oh, 250K. And I mean, I thought that I knew what I was in for, but I had no idea. That was definitely the hardest race I've ever done in my whole life. Really? Out of everything. And I mean, I've now done like I've now done milers, which are like 160K in some really tough climates and conditions. I've now done like...
And in one go.
Over 14. Milers in one go. I've now done 14 multi-stage ultras.
But like, so multi-stage is you do 60Ks, sleep
a day.
A day, and then do 4 days in a row,
But day four is double day, so like 90K.
Oof.
And also you have to carry everything you need on your back for the week.
So you have to have enough water for the whole thing from the
start.
They
give you water. Give you water, a tent, and they give you shelter.
Okay.
But I mean, the shelter is like, I mean, no one can see the room we're in, but like that is like this small bit is 12 people.
Yeah, I've heard it's just like everyone it's gets small, yeah, and everyone's hurting, yeah, from running and everything. Yeah.
And water's whatever, and then so tent, water, whatever, and then you just have your back on your
pack. And did you have any crew for that first one, or you just went?
No, you're out there in the desert.
Wow.
And I mean, I thought I'd hit a wall, so like I was doing training things like, you know, my mom would get home and it'd be an apartment like yours here, kind of, right? But I'd have the heater up to like 45 degrees and I'd have every single hoodie and jumper on in the cupboard.
Because it's so hot.
Covered up. And my mom would get home and be like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'd be like sweating buckets and I'd be like, mom, I'm going to hit a wall in the desert, kind of thing. Like, I need to keep doing this. I'd do it for 4 hours. And I would just be sweating so
and
much.
Lots of running as well, lots of time on
so
legs.
Much running. But then I got plantar fasciitis early on. It was brutal and like it was so savage. But like I also things like I met this girl, Louise, who is she's from Tasmania. Oh, she's such an inspiration actually. But her boyfriend, he's actually quadriplegic. Yeah. But she did a thing, she did 24 hours of burpees, which is crazy. Anyway, she did an hour of burpees, and I was like, I can do that. And I didn't do it to try and beat a record, but I was like, I'll see how I go. And it was like 700 burpees in an hour.
Wow.
But it was like you have to go down chin to ground, oof, arms all the way out to the side, back up, and then jump up.
Gnarly.
But yeah, Louise, she's incredible, yeah. She's with a guy, Ryan, from in Tassie, and I mean, she's done 24 hours of burpees that many times over, trying to beat the world record.
Wow.
And her boyfriend, Ryan, he's in a wheelchair, but like, yeah, she just sees him for who he is, and it's like so amazing, yeah.
That's so nice.
Yeah, she's amazing, yeah.
So she inspired you with your first run and your running. So you finish your first ultra.
I was cooked.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. You
so all my friends had bets on that I was going to fail, yeah.
So you finished the first one. You've got three more to go. How far is the gap between them?
I mean, Namibia was in, like, say, April. Then I had, like, 12 weeks. But I got home and I was on the walk. Like, I had walking sticks.
Wow.
I was cooked. My lip. I need to get like laser surgery. Honestly, I have precancerous cells on my lip.
Well,
I pretty much got cancer from like all of my races. Honestly, so I need to get surgery on my lip already. Just because of all the sun damage.
Wow.
So after the first race, I went on antibiotics because it went black, and I got like fevers and everything. Crazy. But anyway, pushed through, and then
So you did the first race.
Did the first race. Somehow survived. Had walking sticks. I was cooked. Like, so, so bad.
Didn't think of giving up and not doing the next race.
No. I was like, I've already paid money. I was like, I've paid money for this. A lot of my friends apparently put on bets and stuff. And then Mongolia was about 10 weeks later. And then after Mongolia, it was 6 weeks. And then it was only...
Six weeks after a multi-day one, you had to do another one.
Yeah, yeah. No, we got closer and closer. Oh. So, I mean, it was like April. Then
so
it
you
was
did
like,
it all in a year.
Four,
250 kilometer.
Yeah. And it got harder and harder. Oh. I mean, Mongolia. And when I was in Mongolia, the second one, I think that was the hardest one.
And this is gnarly like, because speaking to Vanessa...
I met her, yeah. She's amazing. I love her.
She was on this pod... She told me that it's like ultra running is not really a young person's sport.
So no, 100% not. Yeah.
And doing all this, like you're probably the youngest in the field in most of your races. Yeah. You finish the fourth one. I'm really interested to hear about how you then end up being the youngest person to ever run an ultra on every continent. So you've ticked off four of the continents. What, you've got South America, Africa, Asia, and Antarctica. Tell me about Antarctica.
So it was only after the second or third one that I was like, oh, there's, as I said to you earlier, there's like, oh, there's actually seven continents in the world.
So like, shows that I didn't finish. Yeah. I need to do three more.
So then I was like, oh, cool.
How was Antarctica, though? Tell me about that.
I mean, Antarctica was insane. So Antarctica was slightly different. I mean, all the other races are that you are in one spot, you run for 50 or 60K a day or whatever it is, 40K, yeah, whatever it is, and then you park up a tent and you go again, you go again, you go, yeah, again. And it's all self-supported and stuff because all seven multi-stage ultras I did, they're all self-supported.
Yeah.
So you have all to of take them.
All the equipment, yeah. My friend Rory Warnock, who I had on the podcast, who was the reason why I got inspired to do it. He ran one in Peru and he told me all about how like gnarly it is having to have everything you have,
yeah,
that you need on you for the whole time. Like
even charging your phone.
Do you take like a spare pair of shoes on
no,
you?
No, I just take one.
One.
No, you can't. I mean, because I'm trying to like really go for it as well. Mm. I mean, my pack's like, I got pretty good at, my pack's only like 5.5 kilograms.
Wow.
Yeah, mine's light. How do you get
enough food in there to...
Also, my pack was light in food. When I got to my last race, the seventh desert race in the Grand Canyon...
Do you, like, do not finish if you...
The first lady...
If you don't take enough food and you have to borrow, like, get food from them, does that mean you disqualify?
Well, so the first lady and myself, I mean, you have to have X amount of calories in weight.
Yeah.
So they usually do calories per weight or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I'm always made sure I had the rules and I hit that.
Yeah.
And so I made sure I had X amount of peanut butter in weight. Oh. Anyway, they weighed my food and they were like, it's not enough. And I was like, what do you mean? You've told me I need this much and I've got peanut butter in this much weight. And they're like, no, it's not enough. And I was like, oh, what the hell? And so, but also the first lady didn't have enough as well.
Wow.
And so, you know, the first lady, she's an incredible runner. She's been around for ages. She's already got a book and everything. I mean, wow, she's probably 10, 15 years older than me. She also got penalized. She got penalized 2 hours and I got penalized 2 hours. And she was the first lady. I was the second lady. And then we both got penalized. Her and I now had seven people behind us on our tail. Oh. Hard. And we had run so hard all week.
Oh my God.
And I mean, wow, it was so funny actually, like,
food. That's so interesting.
I know, but it was funny actually during that week. I mean, yeah, it was about the running, but it also wasn't like, I almost felt the inclination to like come out to her and tell her about like being gay or like whatever it was. But she made a comment during the, I don't know, maybe it was day four or something. And she was like, oh, I was talking to so-and-so, you know, the lesbian runner, the one with short hair or whatever it was. And I was like, oh, God.
Oh.
Yeah, and so, like, she straight away kind of, she put her into a box or she, like, what's the word?
Judged her.
Yeah, she judged her and she put her into, like, this,
stereotype.
Yeah, stereotype. So she stereotyped her. Once she stereotyped her, I was like...
she's running next to you as well.
Yeah, and I was nearly about to tell her. And I was so excited to tell her, but then she stereotyped and I was like, God damn it, like, it sucks. I really wanted to tell her and I really wanted to, like... But I just kept seeing in all these races so many times, like, the stereotypes people were making.
Mm.
And so it just kept making me not want to come out as who I was. Yeah, because I never wanted to be the youngest person to run across all the continents or the lesbian one.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, yeah.
Tell me about Antarctica because there's a few things I really want to unpack.
Oh, sorry, Antarctica. So first thing
I
was...
I want to talk about your last
race
when you just found out, I could be the youngest person to run them all, what that stage was, and then if you're willing to go into a bit, I'd love to talk to you a bit about your sexuality because I think it's a good opportunity and a platform to share it if...
I mean, first thing would be Antarctica, right?
Yes, yeah,
Antarctica. I mean, insane. I mean, did you watch Pengu, the TV show, as a kid, right? So, like, if there's a penguin, when you're running, so the best so Antarctica was slightly different. You're on a boat. You go from the bottom of South America. So we all flew from wherever we were into
Chile,
wherever, Argentina. Chile. Yep. And then we flew to the bottom to, what's it called?
Antarctica.
No, the bottom of it, Ushuaia. Ushuaia is the bottom of, like, South America. So very bottom. And then from there you get on a boat and you board it and it's about 4 days across to Antarctica. And that is seasickness passage. And I mean, that lives up to its name. It's so cooked. It's so bad.
And then you've got to run a 250K race.
And it's the worst thing in the world because, I mean, you're on a boat and you're thinking, I'm paying $20,000 right now, or whatever it is. And I'm just so sick. And I'm literally hugging my bed or whatever it was. And I mean, my roommate, she was from Australia as well, which was quite funny. And we got on the boat, we started hitting the seasickness passage. They said, who wants a seasickness, like, tab?
Mm.
A tab goes behind your ears, like a little sticker. And I already had the tablets, so I was, like, verbally taking the tablets. I said, no, I don't need the sticker thing behind my ear, it's fine. Within, like, 20 minutes, I was vomiting and hugging the toilet. God. It was the worst thing ever. So I was like, I need the tablets.
So then you get off the boat.
So I was just like, I'm dying. Like, I miss all of meal plans. So I got the sticker thing behind my ear as well because I was just literally vomiting my head off. And you're trying
to,
like,
maintain nutrition to be able to run it.
And then you just spend 4 days through seasickness passage from the bottom of South America to Antarctica.
Yeah.
And you're on this boat. And, I mean, your roommate, hopefully, like, my lady was, like, epic. But, like, you're in your room and you spend 4 days there or whatever. And then if you leave any door or anything open. I mean, one night I left my door open. And no, trigger ball and everything, you leave your door open and suddenly the trigger ball bounces out and you go bang.
What's bang, the trigger ball?
Bang, bang. Like trigger ball, like massage ball, like a tennis ball. So like if you leave anything
that's not locked in, tied out.
Yeah. So she wanted to kill me because I was a bloody pest because I didn't tie anything down. I left doors open and like, oh, so your
nutrition shit, you've been feeling like shit.
Yeah, I was cool. You
get off the boat.
Yeah.
Tell me about the race.
So then race started. I mean, you can only get there and start the Racing the Planet 4 Desert race if you've done like certain races already and stuff.
So you have to qualify for it, basically.
Yeah, you have to qualify, yeah. But I mean, the top 10 guys are really elite. I mean, the first guy is amazing. I mean, they're a bit cheeky almost where they run and they don't stop for the toilet. They pee while they're going. You see the little yellow kind of like thing and you're like, oh, god damn.
Because it's freezing. How hard is it running?
Yeah, we're cold. I mean, so you have to do a thing where if you're going across to Antarctica for the day, right? So you're on a big boat. Now, okay, you need to get yourself ready. You need to get your food ready and everything. So your food, right, is like muesli bars, chocolate, lollies, whatever it is. Everything has to be out of packages. So everything is just in a plastic container.
Mm-hmm.
For that, it's just all put in a plastic container and then you go across the land and then your plastic container has a label on it and then you put it on the top and then you go run. Now, when you start running, it gets hot, right? So this is where it's scary. Global warming is fucked. Like, it got really hot and, I mean, I was stripping off layers and also my container melted. So, like, I had a chocolate bar, a salami stick, a lolly thing, a goo chew, whatever. It all melted into one thing.
Mm.
And then I got round after a loop and I had this thing that was like this and I had to just eat that.
So how, like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the race.
So day one, we're on a boat, we go across the Zodiac. Yeah. Epic, like, Zodiac across, insane. I mean, I'm on the Zodiac. So you're
staying on a boat. We're staying on a boat. Zodiac to land, you run for...
Run. What, and we do that like, for, like, day, okay, until the first runner hits 250K.
Okay.
But wild, because, like, you're catching the Zodiac across of a day. But then
to,
like, qualify
that you ran an ultra, you have to have done at least a certain amount or something.
Oh, but we all did, I did over 200K. So, yeah, like, we're all sweet. But, like, I mean...
Interesting race.
We were like going across on the Zodiac boat though, and like there's a there was like a whale that does its whole like
crazy,
and it just does this whole thing beside you, and you're like, holy shit. And then so on day one, the first day was the biggest day. It was figure eight. Every other day was like a 1K zigzag up and around and then back around.
Oh, so you're just doing like 2K loops.
2K loops for like 12 hours.
Oh, fuck.
And I mean, you can get woken up of a morning at 4 a.m. and then you can be told the weather's bad, so go back to bed. And you've already had breakfast, coffee, everything. Mm. You're in all your gear and you have to go back to bed. And you're like, sick, thanks. So but on just, like,
trying to get
day one, though... Day one was nuts. I mean, day one was literally like a 7K loop. We met people who were like in like a kind of Antarctica cubicle thing. and they'd been there for ages. Mm. And then you loop back around as another loop. I fell through the ice on the second part of the loop, and I literally fell through the ice, and like panic kicked in pretty hard. And I mean, I don't really exaggerate things. I don't really care. Like, but, so we did 7K run. That's cool. And then second, figure eight. And then, it got really hot. So the ice melted and then I fell through the ice and it was, it was honestly nuts. And I'm like, oh, can't even explain to anyone, but like I fell through the ice up into my chest.
And you're like holding on.
Yeah, I was cooked. And like I don't even care about my phone or anything. I'm like, just someone can save me. And then someone ran over and they like pulled were like down. Yelling out. And then they grabbed out tape. And it wasn't even enough to have my one pole. They grabbed one pole of mine. I threw another of my pole at them. And then they taped my poles together. And then they grabbed me out through both, two poles.
Wow.
And they had to pull me out. And then I was up to here.
If
like
they got too close, they would have fallen in too.
Yeah, yeah. And it would just sunk through. And then I had to cut the whole course shorter.
Wow. So I bet you felt good finishing that one.
I mean, and then they gave me the option of like changing clothes and everything. But I was like, I don't really want to stop. Because if you stop running, like you'll get colder. So I just kept going.
Kind of gnarly running.
But it's so hard to explain until you're there.
You have to show me some photos and stuff. So you finish that one.
I'll give you photos, yeah.
So you've done four ultras. And then where do you learn that, wait a second, I've done this pretty young. If I do it in
After the third one, I was like, oh,
North
shit,
America
there's...
and Europe, then I've done...
Well, I was like, oh, shit, there's seven continents. And then I think it was after the third one, I was like, maybe I keep going. I saw there was one in New Zealand. Still really good friends now with
Does
the ladies.
Does New Zealand classify as Australia? As
yeah, Oceania.
Oceania.
Yeah, so, okay. Ocean. Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, sweet. And then, dude, that New Zealand was cooked. I mean, I've done the New Zealand one twice. The second time round, I cut off. So the first time round, it was a 330K race.
Wow.
In 6 days. And I mean, a rest day is worse than anything because you run and then like resting is so bad because you then your body seizes up. It gets, yeah.
So that was your fifth one?
Fifth one, yeah.
Tell me about your seventh one. What was the last one and what was, how did it feel to?
So New Zealand one though, I did it a second time. I cut off, I don't know, I'm going to make it up, but like, let's say I did 25 hours. Second time around, I did in like 18 hours.
Wow.
Cut off so much just because of how much fitter I was, more experienced ready I was. I then went and did Iceland. Iceland was brutal, horrible.
That was the year at one.
Wouldn't recommend it to anyone. We ran literally from Iceland is incredible, but
it's
like
really green, eh?
We ran from the
Greenland's really icy.
Well, we got hit by like these. It felt like shards of glass the whole time. So we ran from pretty much the bottom of Iceland to the top.
No.
Brutal. And then the last one was the Grand Canyon race. And the girl who is my colleague right now, Emily, who helps me in my speaking gigs and stuff, she actually came over and saw me finish my seventh Grand Canyon race, which is amazing.
Wow.
And that was a grand.
Yeah, what was that feeling to be? Was it like talked about at the event? Was it like, hey, if Jackie finishes this race,
I mean,
she's gonna be the youngest to
I thought it might have been more, but like it was a little bit but not really. But also I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less. I was just like so stoked, and I actually loved that race. Day one of that event, I was standing outside my tent, and so like as I said, the tent's like, you know, this big. And I overheard the people in my tent. And everyone's CEOs and stuff, because it's like $5,000 to these events. And they were all like, there was a few guys in the tent, and they're like, how's this young girl like, because what, how, I would have been 23, 24. They're like, how is she affording to do these? Like, what's she doing with her life? They were kind of questioning me, my decisions, what I was doing, like all these things. And I was literally standing outside the tent. And I was like, oh. Anyway, I just was like, hey guys, I'm outside the tent. You know, you can just ask me these questions. Like, there's no like barrier, or and I still live by this because like even
how did you afford to do them?
Sponsors.
See.
Learn how to do it. I mean, I look back at it's not about me. It's about like
the story and the inspiration that other people get from it.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like you've nailed it as well. I mean, and you're probably that's why I'm even doing the podcast. I haven't done a podcast in years. I hate podcasts. I don't do them with anyone. Sorry if anyone doesn't even gain...
Well, thank you, because I think your story is incredible to share.
No, but I mean, I think that early on I learned about, like, if there's a company, I'm like, oh, this company is sick. Like, they're doing great stuff, whatever it is. And it's like, hey, I'm doing this, I'm running across these continents, or I'm doing this for this reason. If you want to be a part of it, great. If you don't, like, what, like, yeah. But this is what I'm doing. And they're like, oh, that's interesting, cool. And then I'm like, do you want to be a part of it? And they're like, yeah, great, we'd love to be. Like, you're a female doing something unique.
Yeah.
And then we kind of, like, blend and do something. But it's never about, like, hey, I want this, I want this, I want this. It's about, like, what can I offer you?
Yeah, how can we and collaborate together?
Yeah, it's like, how can we work together? How can we form a partnership? Like, and even with you and I, like, I mean, the whole thing, like, over the last few years, it's just like, oh, how can we just, like, work together?
Yeah.
Like, what can we learn from each other? Mm. And I just hate that
the competitive side of stuff sometimes.
The generation these days is all about, like, what am I gaining?
Yeah.
Like, today, I'm not gaining any. Like, it's just like, oh, let's learn something. Yeah, like, have fun. Like, yeah.
Well, I might gain something because I'm going to ask you a question now. I've got my 100K first race coming up. It's nothing like a multi-day one, but I'm sure you've done, I know you've got a Noosa 100K or 80K coming up in the next couple of weeks. What's, give me like one tip. What's the one thing? You gave me a couple, but just now we're on air. Mm. What are like top three things for someone who's running a 100K for the first time in 10 weeks? What are the three things that I should be aware of?
I would say, do you know your support crew?
Not really. Yeah, my coach and then my friend Rory who...
And Carolina.
She's maybe going to be there.
Yeah, so whoever your support crew is, make sure that they don't ask you questions.
Okay.
Don't ask you questions. Be like...
give you direction.
You run into each checkpoint, right? And they hold out to you literally a Clif Bar, a gel, a lolly, or whatever you like, whatever you know that you like, they offer you the options.
I think I'm going to talk to them and have fun and have like a filmer there and kind of like make it more of a game.
Maybe you want to. Maybe that's fine. I want to
take my phone and do like a 10K check and bring like the community on for a thing.
100% maybe. But if you're like hurting and bad, less questions is more. Questions is really overwhelming.
Yeah.
So like if you're hurting, getting asked all these questions is really hard.
Okay, so no questions,
like,
one.
It's just like offer you.
Yeah.
And you tell them stuff. Yeah. You can still do what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You can still talk about things. You can still say things and whatever. Yeah. But like...
no questions. Second one. What about physicality and stuff? What should I do and don't with my next...
Slow, low building. Like, I mean, yeah, literally 10% per week. 10% per week build. Increase. Build slow.
Yeah, my coach said smart. That. I said to him the other day, my friend Jack, who's an F1 driver, he's like... Hey, do you want to do this 50K run with me in 2 weeks?
And I was like, you're not doing that, or
it'll ruin you. And I was like, oh, okay.
Be smart. I think slow and build. Smart. And like, don't get caught up in like, what, yeah, if anyone says to you like that, let's do this.
Well, actually, I'm meant to be on a deload this week, and you're like, let's go for a run tomorrow.
Nah, so but I mean, we'll can just do whatever you want to do.
That's what I mean. We'll do like 10, 12K tomorrow.
But see, the thing is, I've been doing it for years, right? Yeah. So I can do whatever. Yeah. And I talk about this, like, I could run 50K tomorrow and I'm fine.
Yeah.
It's wild. I mean, I don't get injured, touch wood.
Yeah.
Can you touch it? Touch it.
Yeah. We'll get in a few tomorrow.
Be smart. So first thing is, with your support crew, like, sit down and have a good chat with them.
Yeah.
Know what, like, when you run into a checkpoint, you need to have, like, really good communication with them. Yeah. On the day, I know it sounds silly right now, but, like, they need to just offer you things and you just choose what you want.
Okay.
They don't need to ask you questions.
Okay.
You're not going to be in the headspace to ask you things. So don't ask you questions. Second thing would be, less is more.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing would be...
Nutrition?
Nutrition. I mean, if you
I've got a few nutritionists that are gonna
eat early. Like, if you skip, so like, have a schedule and
stay
follow
ahead
that.
Of you, stay yes. Ahead of your energy,
if you if you stop eating by 50K, you're screwed for the last 50. Yeah. Like, it's on you. Like, there's nothing else. There's literally no.
Yeah, yeah.
Just literally, it's easy though. I mean, like, an hour in, Morton Gel. I think Morton Gels are the best. Morton Gel, Clif Bar. And they just do that every hour on the hour, or like every 30 minutes, have half and half, keep going. Once you get to a like halfway, if you haven't done that, you're going to be screwed.
Yeah.
And every time you get into a checkpoint, if you haven't finished your 2 500 milliliter water bottles, you're screwed.
Yeah. Okay.
One should be water. One should be electrolyte. That's if you haven't finished both of them, you're screwed. Morning. Yeah. Like, that's it.
That's
simple.
Amazing.
Yeah.
One last little direction I want to go, because.
And chafing, Vaseline or squirrel nut butter everywhere.
Okay.
Bum, balls, underarms.
I haven't chafed that bad yet, but I'm sure I will once the K's get
honestly
bigger.
Everywhere.
I want to quickly, before we wrap this up, because...
And oh, last, yeah, one more thing. If you think of a negative thought, eat a lolly or you need more nutritional fuel. So like negative thought means you need more glucose.
Okay.
You're low on lollies, you need glucose, like have a lolly.
I love it, lollies all day.
Stay positive. Be like, I feel negative, eat lollies, like you'll feel better.
I don't know. I'm slightly optimistic on my mindset through it, that I'm going to kind of like laugh my way through the negative thoughts.
If you feel negative though, call me or eat a lolly. Okay. Yeah.
That's amazing. There's two last things, because I did finish the same question, but I think we have a unique opportunity right now because you mentioned it a few times throughout this chat. Your sexuality is something that, when did you come out and how hard was that?
Because
we've done some work together about around
yeah,
this.
Yeah, sure.
It's okay to ask you about it, it's fine.
Of course. We've never really touched on it. I mean, I've never even touched on it in podcasts. I was hanging out with a girl who is one of the main, like, AFL players or whatever. And then it was only when she said to me, I'm going to start dating this other person. And I was like, oh. And I had to sit down and think about, like, oh, how do I feel about that? And I kind of felt jealous. And I was like, why do I feel jealous about that? And I was like, oh, shit. And I went straight home and said to my parents, do you know that, like, this girl's gay and this girl's gay and this girl's gay? And I was like... And they didn't really react. And I was just like, oh, I feel so jealous and funny. And like,
How old were you?
18. I mean, and before that, I didn't really even know what gay was. Or I couldn't really.
We went to all girls school. And...
Yeah, but I couldn't really understand it because, I mean, everyone in my life who I saw around me that was maybe gay was like, they weren't someone that I
related
understood.
To.
No. I mean,. I like to take care of myself and I have like certain goals and visions in my life and certain role models and the way that these other people were behaving and acting and representing themselves didn't relate to me and I couldn't relate to that and I would never ever, I'm not saying they're lessening themselves as a human, but I set certain standards for myself and I didn't see myself in these people.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it really difficult. And I mean, I think it's so amazing these days for girls to come out as being gay because they have so many amazing role models. And I mean, Katie Brennan's one of my amazing friends and like, yeah, Emily Bates and yeah, Louise Stevenson, God, there's so Kate Mack, like whoever, like, and
just be yourself.
Be yourself. And I think with my parents, they, I mean, I'll be honest, I come from the white picket fence family. Mum and dad are like, I think they thought I was going to go rogue when I told them and go to this like super stereotypical version of a lesbian maybe 15 years ago. And I was like, guys, I'm still me kind of thing.
I love that.
And... I don't even know. I mean, I probably can't even say this, but, like, I don't need to go to a gay pride day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to celebrate who I am. I just want to be who I am. I don't really even have that many gay friends. I just want to be who I am, slide under the radar, do my thing and be accepted and, like...
Love that. It's such a beautiful way to put it because I think there is such a connotation quite often with the LGBTQAI plus community...
Yeah.
...to be... the Mardi Gras version of it.
Yeah.
But I've got so many friends just like yourself who are just attracted to who they're attracted to.
Exactly. I don't need to be recognized. Yeah. I don't want to be told yes or no. I don't want anything.
I don't want someone at a race to be that's the lesbian girl.
Yeah.
Exactly like we touched on earlier.
It's just like, just let me be me. Yeah. I just want to be me. I want to be sweet. And like, I mean, my mum and dad are so good. I mean, also I think it's like this level of understanding of, be kind to people who don't know the language or terminology to use. I mean, my dad, he's nearly 70 and he's a champ. Like, and I think it was maybe 6 months ago, he made a joke about, he said something about, you're wearing some pufta shoes to a guy. Like, my dad was brought up in Melbourne and he was told that that was fine terminology. But like, so I could have embarrassed him in front of him, myself and everyone there. And called him out. But, like, what am I going to get from that? Whereas, like, I just waited and later on I said, like...
Just to let you know.
Dad, please, like, don't use that terminology. It's not nice anymore. Like, just be a bit more respectful and thoughtful. Like, gave him a hug, and it was like a loving way to tell him that, like, this isn't the way to talk about it. And he was so receptive, and it was sweet, and it was great.
Whereas if you try and call him out there, that turns into a trigger, and it turns into confrontation. Well, nah, thank you so much for sharing that part. I think it's...
I think just, like, with teaching people... I think
there's going to be people listening right now who are definitely going to, maybe not change perspectives, but understand from a completely different view, which I think is so important. We are going to have to wrap this up.
Yeah, go. It's moving on.
I've got one more question that I do finish with every guest, and that question is, what does being a good human mean to Jackie Bell?
God, I think it means... God, I'm a bit upset right now. I think it means respecting others and just, like, if you give feedback, look out for them and, like, you know, it's not all about you and just, yeah, God, just being a good person. I think just give people feedback but in a happy and healthy space, and I think just put your best foot forward in life, and, I mean, what is good human...
But you've answered it very well.
I think for me personally, it's about knowing, like, what means something to me, and that's, like, honesty, and I think it's, like, always living up to that. So, like, honesty for me is probably one. And I think we go through phases of, like, what means more in different parts of our life. It changes, yeah. So I think for me right now is honesty. And I mean, my friend had to jump the pool the other day to get into my parents' swimming pool, and I had to be honest with them about her jumping the pool and getting in trouble from another neighbor. But it's like, just, like, stick to your honesty, or, like, whatever it is you say you're going to do, stick to that. Yeah, so.
I love that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. It's been an amazing chat. I will leave everything in the show notes so people can find more about you. Thank you for being a good human ambassador. I know, as you said, you don't do too many podcasts, and it's been a bit of an emotional rollercoaster for you. So I'm going to give you a really big hug.
Also, good human shout out to, like, Alex Hayes, Lucy, Storm, you. Who else is there?
Willie, Harry, Harley.
Harry Bink. Saw him
Harry
in
was meant to come right now. He's dating
his,
my sister, Sophia, who's probably about to walk in the door, but she just said that he pulled out of dinner because, unfortunately, one of his good friends.
Yeah, I love that the Good Human Factory is, like, all intertwined. I love that.
Well, give me a big hug. This has been an amazing chat. Thank you. Love you, Jack. Thank you so much, and thanks, everyone, for listening. You.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.